up next. It's hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show, the second hour. We're going to be talking about ADHD and related issues of attention and memory and consciousness. And we have a pioneer in this field who's worked on some new approaches in understanding these aspects of our awareness. I'm on the line from Boulder, Colorado. Susan McCrossin, I believe. Is that right, Susan? Is that how you say your name?
Right.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
Perfectly pronounced.
Thank you. Now, I'd like you to think of our audience as if we're talking to the uninitiated, those that really haven't been trained in the field. Can you give us an idea?
Many of us are naturally ADD.
Yeah. No, people use it all the time. I have friends who say they're ADD.
But clinical.
I don't take them seriously. Could you tell us what it means, a one-paragraph description of ADD from your understanding?
Okay. Well, I think all learning is a result of how well you access information in your head and how well you integrate what's going on. Mm. We have two sides to our brain. We have a creative, emotional, intuitive side that we're born with, mm-hmm. and that's called the gestalt. Mm-hmm. And at about two, logic is supposed to start coming online, mm-hmm. and that gives you the ability to understand the concept of time, to be able to keep your attention over time, to understand consequences. And for various emotional reasons, in some people, it doesn't come online. So they stay, if you like, emotionally immature. They're reactive. They can't stay focused over time. It's either now or not now, just like you were treating a baby.
Wouldn't that typically have gotten the kids a slap or something like that in previous generations?
Probably. Certainly my generation.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, you were punished for being that way. That was not normal behavior in a classroom.
Right.
There's a kid whose tension is wandering.
Where you used your hands. You know, we used to have a lot more people in the country on the farms. Uh-huh. We're using your hands, and it's got absolutely nothing to do with your IQ. Now we're bringing, there's fewer and fewer people on the land, and they're coming into the cities. And of course, we expect everybody to finish high school, go to college, to get a good job so you can make a lot of money, and then you can be happy.
Yeah, right. The cycle of life. Are there any states of consciousness that normal people might experience that would be similar to an ADD state? Like for example, on the eve of an examination, perhaps, or when you're on the stage trying to remember your lines, our attention is not quite working normally.
That's when actually the connection between the two sides of the brain shut down.
Uh-huh.
That's exam anxiety, that's stage fright. That's actually the fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. But it's not supposed to happen when you're under emotional stress because you become dysfunctional and can't think. And that's the kind of situation where later you think, oh, God, I wish I'd said this and I wish I'd said that. But in that moment, you lost it, you know, whether it's an exam. And that's a different thing. That's the actual connection between the two sides shutting down. And as soon as the stress has passed, then you can do the task.
Mm-hmm. Now, classically, when kids today are diagnosed for this, they are given counseling? Is that the first level of
No, I would say the first level is medicate them because...
You mean like Ritalin or...
the West is in a biomechanical model, right? If you don't do surgery, then you give a drug. And if neither of those work, there's no other choices.
Mm. So Ritalin and Adderall would be examples of drugs that are
Ritalin
being used.
Amphetamine derivatives. That's right.
Uh-huh. Amphetamine. Now, amphetamine, is that because the kids, they're perceived as thinking too slowly and they need to be speeded up in their thinking processes? Or why do amphetamines being used
for this? Well, it's interesting that you say that because they can't explain why an amphetamine derivative slows down children and speeds up adults.
Oh, it slows down children. Okay, because they're going too fast.
But it speeds up adults.
Interesting. Right? Huh.
And some people find it very helpful. Other people sort of turn into zombies. It's suppressing them too much, and others have no change at all.
So it's really very different from person to person.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's why I was wondering if there was counseling first to see what the appropriate protocols would be for that student.
Well, typically, so in Europe, they will give medication and counseling and, you know, psychotherapy or whatever, some psychologists to work with them. But usually in the United States, all the studies are done as drug trials. They don't want anything confounding the results because they basically just want to prove that the drug made the difference. So they don't do the combined.
Mm-hmm. So there's a real drug focus in the Western countries.
It's a pretty strong lobby.
Let's talk about the statistics here, Susan, about how many people are being diagnosed with ADD. And, you know, what is this difference between just being kind of distracted to being clinically dysfunctional?
Yeah, it's interesting. Just my experience, it's hard to know exactly what the numbers are because it depends who's doing the study. But I would say that probably 30, 35% of the population is in real trouble as far as trying to sit in a classroom all day and do well academically. And then you've probably got another 20% who are gifted learners and have no trouble at all. Everybody else is somewhere in between to varying degrees. And I was one of the somewhere in between people.
So you yourself were diagnosed with this, or did you discover it on your own, or how did
no,
it,
well,
what was your story?
I just did really poorly in exams. And in Australia, we have the British system where after 12 years of school, you have one set of final exams, and that's your high school grade and your university entrance.
Oh.
There's no GPA. There's no entrance exams. And so I couldn't rote memorize. I wasn't a behavioral problem in class, so it was never identified as a problem. And I failed ancient Greek history, which I can tell you has never really held me back in life. But that's a technical fail, right?
Yeah.
There was no summer school. I would have had to repeat the entire last year again, and they take 10% of the mark off if you're coming through a second time. And I knew that I couldn't do any better. And luckily for me, I was captain of the debating team at school, and we never lost while I was captain. But, of course, there were no points for that, no mark at all. Everything I was good at didn't count, as it turned out. And I had a scholarship from year 10 based on so-called IQ, where you look at the next pattern in the series. And so I was able to talk my way into a technical school, and I passed that. Right. And then I spent 15 years in the computer industry. So I was actually high logic, low creative gestalt. So high logic, out of touch with your feelings, right? So I worked with computers and men. Neither of them wanted to talk about feelings. So I did quite well in that industry.
especially in Australia, I'd imagine.
Yes, and that was what.
Yeah. Listen, we've got to go to a break for a second. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. I'd like to hear more about how you've evolved this whole way of thinking about ADD.
Sure.
Talk to you in a minute.
And this is the Dr. Future Show.
And this is Susan McCrossin.
Yes, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Susan McCrossin on ADHD and breaking the learning barrier. Susan, could you tell us what you mean by the learning barrier?
Yes, it's really just a lack of access that determines whether you're going to have a problem learning or not. The best analogy I can think of is thinking about going into the house and you turn the light switch on and it doesn't turn on. And you think, okay, that's it. It's broken irreparably. When it could be the bulb, it could be the switch, it could be the circuit breaker, or it could be the wire. And I go in and check all those things. And when you connect it up again, it just starts working, right? So they're really like a hurdle to get over, this lack of integration of function and being able to bring information. I mean, basically, we learn through our eyes and our ears.
Right.
And it's supposed to come into the brain to go to the right location with the right timing. And then when that happens, you can learn easily.
Yeah, you talk about timing in the brain. Would it be fair to compare that as an analogy to, say, an automobile with the timing?
Exactly. And I look at all the components with my method using acupressure, and I look at and make sure the pistons are working properly and that the spark plugs are firing properly, and take all the components out and then bring it back together and make sure it all works in harmony together. And when you do that, you can function back.
I see. So would you say that there's a signature of the brain that indicates that it's in balance, like a EEG or something like that?
Well, so after having had my learning problem, after developing this work, I went back to university at 39 to get access to the brain scanning equipment.
Oh, okay.
And I did a double degree in neuroscience and psychology, not a soft options, right?
No.
And I ended up graduating equal top student because now when I go into an exam, I can see the page in the book.
And you had some computer programming experience too, so you're bringing an engineering mind, in a sense, to the biology of the computer.
The brain's far more interesting than computers are.
Oh, yeah? But yet, you seem to be using some analogies. I noticed bit in your terminology.
Yes, that's exactly right. So part of what I thought was happening, I was able to verify with the brain scanning. So I took a group of adults who had a history of learning difficulties and got them to do a decision-making task. They already knew at the university, because a PhD student was working on it, that ADD, ADHD people never become active in the frontal lobes when they make a decision, which is what normal people do. So I had my group, I scanned them beforehand. They weren't active when they did the in the frontal lobes when they made the decision. I treated them, and they all became active in the frontal lobes. And clinically, their learning difficulties went away. And they were able to learn easily. They were able to stay on task, get things completed, completely change them.
Now, did you say treated? What exactly do you mean? You bringing in another modality?
Yeah. So I use a combination of muscle testing. So, like chiropractors use. Mm-hmm. Because the muscles are controlled by the subconscious mind. You know, you don't have to think about what your muscles are doing to use them. And so that link, using the muscle testing to go back into the subconscious, I can ask the brain how it's processing. And then I have a method using very gentle acupressure to rewire the brain. It's about 80 steps. It typically takes about 8 hours, and it's a permanent change.
Acupressure. Now, do you use needles, or are you touching specific points?
Just my hands.
Hands,
just my hands.
Uh-huh. Okay. We had interviewed someone who was expert in what they call therapeutic massage a while back, and that seemed to affect the mentality of kids. Would this be like a massage, or is it much more?
It's more specific to the brain, but therapeutic massage is definitely going to relax the nervous system.
Uh-huh.
Right? And many times the learning difficulty person has a stressed nervous system. And there's usually some emotional event that happened before they were five that caused them to shut down part of the brain as an adaptation to stress.
You mean avoidance or something? You mean some kind of traumatic event?
Birth of a sibling is the commonest. So I usually see the eldest male child. And if the sibling was born before the child was at school, then that's a big shock to you. You know, you were the center of the universe, and they went and brought another one into the family.
Yeah, I can testify to that. I was the oldest.
I was the second one.
Oh, okay. Well, we know both sides then. I must say, it's true. Your attention does, when you suddenly have somebody getting your parents' attention instead of you, that's a big deal.
It is a big deal, because no matter what your parents do to try to keep the attention on the eldest, babies require a lot of attention.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Feeding. And babies are used to having you at their beck and command, and suddenly you're not, partially. What's wrong?
Yeah. Well, I got another one. What's wrong with me?
Yes.
It's a very common reaction.
What's wrong with me? Oh, no. What did I do? I'm not crying enough. it's interesting how these things evolve. But that's all normal, though. I mean, we all deal with sibling rivalry issues and stuff like that. That shouldn't create anything that would be considered abnormal.
Well, some people, it is enough of a trauma.
Really?
To cause it. And other people, they couldn't care less, right?
Mm-hmm. So the old adage about loving all your kids equally, this would help prevent ADD.
That's right. I'll space them out a little more, but they're not always planned, are they? So, here I am.
Boy, life is strange. Okay, well, so we have these differences in learning, and then we get thrown into the meat grinder of the school system, some might say, where everyone has to pay attention to the same teacher at the same time.
Yes.
Now, that's shifting because all the kids have cell phones now, and their smartphones, which give them access to all these apps, which completely fractionate intention. How do you deal with that? Or how do you see that as evolving?
Well, if I tell you, if I was a teacher, there would be no cell phones in the room.
Really? You'd be strict about that?
In fact, when I teach this work, I've had to just, you know, I don't like bossing adults around, but I've just learned that they get distracted. They don't hear me. Then I'm repeating myself. And then by the time I'm repeating myself for the fifth time, because they're looking at something else, I start to get a little irritated, right?
Uh-huh.
So I now say, okay, all electronic devices are off, right? Because this is complicated what I'm going to explain to you, and I need your full attention, and it's just a distraction that we don't need, you know? Mm-hmm. So I even do it with adults.
Yeah.
So I would certainly do it with children.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering how maybe, you know, as a theory, possibly that ADD might be some kind of evolutionary adaptation to this split attention that modern society seems to demand of us.
Well, yes, except typically they're not attending to anything, right? They're just sort of la, 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 you know, in...
Well, it's very Pavlovian. I mean, the bell rings, you go look at it, right? You go see, oh, who's that on my SMS messaging? Who, you know, you set your tones, and you even know tones for certain people, things like that. That's all normal with the kids now.
Right. I was just at lunch 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
And there were six guys, like workman-type guys, at the next table.
Uh-huh.
And five of them were playing with their phones. And the sixth one was just staring out the window.
So which ones do you think have ADD?
Which one is abnormal?
Sure. But they're all using their hands, right? So they might all have it. I mean, those little sound bites you get on the phone, that's perfect for the ADD person, right?
Yes.
And of course, the school systems are written by people who are logic dominant. Because have you ever noticed that when you're at school, you're supposed to be good at everything? You know, you get like, oh, no good in math, no good in this. And you have to be a generalist. And as soon as you leave school, you start to specialize and become a specialist in something.
Well, that's what people pay you for, right?
Right.
You be a specialist, exactly. Yeah. They paid me to be a generalist. I'd be rich.
Exactly.
Well, actually, wait a minute, I am. Oh, okay. That's another story. How did you get the idea that acupressure would help balance the brain? How did that come in?
I'd like to say I planned it, but I kind of bumbled my way into it. Mm. I actually studied a type of kinesiology in Arizona called applied physiology by a guy called Richard Utt, who just died a couple of years ago. And he was the first kinesiologist I'd come across that had the idea that you could change something permanently and not have to redo it all the time. Because I had years of decades of chiropractic, and that kept me out of a back brace after a bad horse riding accident, but it never stabilized. I always had a fixated atlas, and C3 was out every week that I went for decades, right?
Wow.
So this work that he was teaching was working with muscles and doing lower backs, and I do that work as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was changing it and changing it permanently, and then he had some work that was looking at some of the deep limbic system part of the brain.
I mean, like the brainstem, the seat of emotions, I think, in the brain?
Yes, and into the amygdala.
The amygdala.
You can take the emotion out of any event. So PTSD, you don't even have to know what the incident was for the person, mm-hmm. and you can remove the emotional content. And it's only ever the emotional content that makes it bad, right? Because it's how we feel about it that makes it bad.
Yeah, it could be an emotional trigger.
Exactly. So we were doing a bit of brain gym where you have to do exercises with kids and then you send them home, you know, about 2 weeks they'll do the exercises and they've got, you know, that doesn't hold. And we found that if we took 10 kids, 3 would change with brain gym profoundly, another 3 or 4 would change while we worked on them and then revert back, and another 3 or 4 wouldn't change at all. So we started bringing in Richard's work and started to do these balances, these permanent change concept where you spent more time with someone. And we had a child psychologist in Melbourne who was sitting them for the Wechsler Intelligence Scale for Children, the WISC, which has been used for about 80 years.
Yeah, the classic intelligence test for kids.
It's not an IQ test, but it is a good predictor of how well you're going to do in school. You're not supposed to change in your ranking on a WISC in your life. You know, so at 15, if you're in the 55th percentile for 15-year-olds, you're going to be in the 55th percentile for 45-year-olds. Mm. Well, we were quadrupling and 5 times in their scores.
Hmm. And this involved trials where you were using acupressure as one of the trials?
Yeah, so she was able to help us to refine it because she could say what was changing and what wasn't.
Oh, very interesting.
In the end, you got consistent change every time, unless there was some sort of organic damage in the brain.
Organic damage. Yeah, after the break, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the underlying process of how you think this might actually work.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to break. This is the Dr. Future Show. We'll be back in a minute. We're just talking about ADHD.
Yes, with our guest, Susan McCrossan, and her brain integration techniques.
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs here. I've been studying healthy bodies for 35 years, and what I've got to tell you may shock and surprise you, but if you listen up, it may change your life. There's lots of reasons to use vitamin C on your skin. It helps support the production of anti-wrinkle fibers like collagen and elastin. It's important for the production of moisture factors, and it can help protect skin cells from the harmful effects of ultraviolet radiation from the sun. But there's another important upside to the use of topical vitamin C involving the healing effects of prostaglandins, cell messengers that function as a major control point and signaling point that can initiate inflammatory and anti-inflammatory processes. What this ultimately means for the skin is that in addition to its highly regarded anti-aging effects, topical vitamin C can have important benefits for reducing the signs of excessive or inappropriate prostaglandin activity in the skin, including pain, redness, and itching, as well as inflammation. What does that mean for your skin? Well, it means faster healing of burns, faster healing of sunburn, and relief from the effects of allergic reactions. It also means faster healing of wounds. To get the best and fastest results from topical vitamin C, make sure you apply it 24 to 48 hours after your wound. And to avoid irritation, use a fatty moisturizing form of vitamin C called ascorbyl palmitate. And to maximize your healing, apply your topical C throughout the day, keeping the area covered with your cream or gel.
Welcome Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Susan McCrossin about why applied kinesthesiology and acupressure might actually balance the brain out and help deal with situations like ADHD. Now, why does it work, Susan? How could touching meridian points in the body affect the way we think?
It does seem mysterious. That's right. Well, it turns out, so the two major research papers I did while I was at university, I actually looked at some of the Asian research, which is translated into English. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that there have been plenty of studies done where they look at the energy body on the outside and what's happening in the physical, and like doing sham points with acupuncture and doesn't make any effect on the brain, and then real points, and then you can see brain activity change. But it turns out that the energy body tells the physical body what to do.
Like it's preceding it then in some ways.
Yes. And in fact, they took a chicken embryo and at the moment of fertilization, injected it with a radioactive isotope and then took an X-ray and discovered that all the lines were already appearing, and they think they're the meridian lines on the outside of the cells, and that's how the cells know how to differentiate into a bone cell or a skin cell or an eyeball cell.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is still, I don't think, fully integrated between East and West on these concepts. I'm not sure that most Western scientists believe in life energy, for example.
And, sure.
You know what I mean? You probably run into that professionally quite often. Though,
yeah, they still bring their children to me.
Well, that's good.
That's how I do it.
That's good. Because it seems like the way in which energy flows through the body, this concept of life energy, which is so common in the East, is just not very well understood here yet. Do you see evolution happening there? Do you see an integration of these ideas?
Yeah. Anyone who's ever tried Chinese medicine knows, you know, I've been going for a long time. If you got a cold, you go to a Chinese doctor, it's gone in 24 hours.
Wow.
Right, and I'm booked quite a long way in advance. I don't have time to be sick.
Wow, so energy is a real thing. But
they've been doing it for thousands of years. They've worked out some things, and they've got thousands of herbs that don't exist outside of China.
Well, why can't we measure it then with our instruments?
Well, you can measure some of the things, but nobody's actually interested. So the research is usually funded by organizations that are hoping to maybe put a patent on something and be able to make money out of it.
I see. So the Western medicine tends to be more drug-based, and the big pharma runs the game here more so.
Right. And a big lobby group, and yes.
And there's not a lot of money in studying electromagnetics or chi energy and things like that.
Yeah, there was a big battle earlier in the 1900s between the osteopathic schools and the medical schools, and the osteopathic schools mostly closed. There's only a couple left, and there's a big one in Montreal.
Yeah.
You know, osteopathy works with the subtle fluids of the body, and they're doctors, right? But they're just sort of like, well, we'll just throw that away or to the side and ignore it. And osteopathy is amazing if you've had some sort of back, or that's what craniosacral comes from. And I broke a wrist a couple of years ago and happened to go to my osteopath because I whacked my head on the way down.
Yeah.
And this is 3 days later, and there's this dull ache in my wrist. Huh. And he held my hand for like 5 minutes, and all the pain went away. I went once a week for about 6 months, and he got significant function back every time I went, and I have a totally normal left wrist now because of him.
I assume this energetics works on everything from broken bones to cancer.
I haven't actually worked with anyone with cancer, but yes.
So it's basically a fundamental aspect of a living organism.
I think so. Yes. If you don't have the energy body flowing properly, then you're going to have problems in the physical body.
Yeah.
And the emotions affect that. We even say, like, he galls me. You know, you get really angry, externalized anger, you're going to end up with gallstones. Right?
Yeah, you can see. So thought to matter happens with energy like this.
We're not static beings. We change all the time. And there's been plenty of research with meditation and how you can change, you know, blood flow and all sorts of heart rate.
Biofeedback,
exactly. The mind is very powerful, it's just harnessing it.
Yes, right.
I have quite a few people say to me, I tried meditation once and I wasn't any good at it. I'm like, I'm sure if you played golf once, you wouldn't be very good at it either.
Right. We have a question from one of our
May I ask a question? The power of the conscious mind to keep us healthy, and to look at Stephen Hawking. He was given 2 years to live. I'd say there was a case of mind over matter. It was about 55 years ago.
Exactly.
And I'd like to know if you could tell us something about how our mind can keep us healthier.
Thank you, John.
Well, energy follows thought. So you can direct, and they've done studies with Britain where they have people praying for someone who has some incurable illness or scar tissue in the eyes, all sorts of things, and these people have recovered. And it's that focused energy of a group on someone can have a big influence, but also that helps if you can't internally do it. But that's why meditation is so powerful, and relaxing the mind, it'll relax the heart rate, the whole body system, because it's really every illness is the result of some sort of unease in the body in some way. It's not mysterious that you get ill in a certain area.
I've heard people tell me that resentment can cause cancer and things
like that. Internalized. There's a cancer personality type. Nice people get cancer because they internalize that anger and that resentment.
Yeah, it's better to let it out.
Yeah, better get the punching bag. No, not the person you're the one who directed it. Just get a punching bag or something.
Oh, dear. Can acupuncture be useful when you're doing mind therapy, too, at the same time?
No, I don't do acupuncture. I'm doing acupressure.
Acupressure. I mean, has anyone worked with it in combination with other therapies, like where you're processing your parents, having acupressure points balanced? Does that?
After I integrate someone, I do all the family members.
Uh-huh.
And I de-stress them around the family members. In fact, I had a great example a few years ago. This young guy who'd come to Colorado to go to college, and he had family back on the East Coast, mm-hmm. and he hadn't been home for 10 years because he felt they disrespected him and they treated him like the baby, and he was all angry about it. And I said, look, why don't you? He happened to be the friend of my receptionist, so I would just put him on my massage table and said, just let me do about 10 minutes. And I had him think about his family mm-hmm. and how awful they were. And then I did my treatment.
Uh-huh. Same time, right?
He goes home for Christmas and he comes back and says, oh, my gosh, they were so nice. I couldn't believe how much they'd changed.
And, of course,
it was him.
Yeah, he was coming from a more space of love, I guess, with his parents.
Exactly. He's not putting that energy out that they're going to meet him with. You know, it's like you lock into a key with someone.
Yes.
And then the battle starts. And it's only got to be one of you stops doing it. Just like playing tennis. You stop hitting the ball back, that person hitting it towards you is going to stop very quickly.
Yeah, he broke the pattern, so to speak.
He broke the pattern, exactly.
Wow.
Yes, he was stunned.
Now, psychologists often refer to these patterns as behaviors,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever think a behavior can be sophisticated enough that it has a life of its own?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
They don't want to die. They want to keep going and...
Well, they just get locked into this whole pattern where they believe that their emotional self is them, right? Well, in fact, it's a mask, it's a matrix over the top of who you really are, and you can't see your way past it.
It's just a story you're telling yourself.
It's a story, exactly. And we've got lots of these little stories and life's like this. And, you know, they talk about those, you know, two guys who sees the world as a terrible place to live and everybody's after him and everything. And then the other guy that sees people as being very nice and everything's for him, one's living in hell, one's living in heaven, they're both living in the same spot. Right?
Yeah.
It's all perspective.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's also the different personality types and how they process differently and like the Enneagram system.
Yes, exactly, exactly. But if you're balanced in yourself and you're not triggered by what people say or do,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, you're not really affected by it. Now, if people are violent or something, you know, then the wise person stays away. You know, believe someone the first time they tell you what they're like, right?
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you shouldn't be bothered by what happens day to day, people out in the community or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what that's just gone on in their life, that mm-hmm. they're grouchy. Might have just lost the dog or something, or who knows, right?
Exactly. Let me ask you this. If you have nothing wrong with you, let's say if you don't have ADHD and you're normal, above normal even, can acupressure combined with kinesiology improve your state of normality, give you more capacity?
Yes. Well, you could. There's always going to be some story from the past that you could probably...
Oh, there's always something to process.
There's always something to process, exactly. Exes,
yeah. Right.
Bosses, family members. Who doesn't have a few wacky family members?
Yeah.
But you could also just... balance so what I teach people in they take a 4-day training with me initially to get some muscle testing, some kinesiology skills.
Okay.
And I teach them how to do emotional stress release on anything. But you can also start balancing the meridians and the energy body, any energy meridians that go with the organs and strengthen those at the same time. You know, I went camping in New Zealand with cousins when I was 15. I caught hepatitis. Nobody else got it, just me. And liver is internalized anger. And I had a lot of anger to my mother. I had a very controlling mother, and I'm the only one that got the hepatitis. I was sick for about a year. And years later, when I go and do this training, I'm aware that my liver has been damaged because my naturopath in Australia told me it was. And I also knew that I couldn't eat anything fatty and I couldn't have anything with alcohol or I'd just throw up. Mm-hmm. And I got them to, we were practicing on each other for 8 weeks. I got them to put my liver alarm point, which is the master point for the liver organ in Chinese medicine, into every circuit that was done on me, whether no matter what we were balancing.
Oh, wow.
And by the time I got back, my naturopath said I'd done 5 years of work on regenerating my liver.
Oh, my. Wow.
So that's the kind of thing that, you know, working on that energy body and that meridian system.
It can happen, huh?
It can change. Right.
So the power of forgiveness could help you reach 100 years old.
I did get into a state of forgiveness with my mother about 4 years ago in India, and she just passed.
But you were able to complete it with her then. That's great.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Well, we got to go to a break right now, but we'll be right back with Susan McCrossin. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Susan McCrossin about her new brain integration techniques. This is your chance if anyone wants to call in and ask her a question in the next few minutes we have available for that. Meanwhile, we do have a question from Mrs. Future here.
Well, you know, I am always fascinated by energy connected to physical symptoms, and your work seems to be one of those kind of boundary crossers where the emotional energy affects the physical energy, and the physical energy, you address things that are going on in perception and consciousness with physical techniques. So I guess I'm just wondering what you think is the connection between those two things, and how does that tell us something about consciousness?
Ah, that's an interesting question. So the Chinese worked out that there's a relationship between specific emotions and specific organs. So someone who has a lot of fear, for instance, gets kidney problems, grief goes into the lungs, heart is unable to give or receive love, often receiving is more problematic than giving. Liver is internalized anger, gallbladder is externalized anger. So there is a direct relationship. And somehow those consistent thoughts or persistent thoughts disturb the energy of particular organs. And so it's why it's so unhealthy to have resentments and hold on to things from the past, because ultimately they will make you sick.
Hmm. Well, do those organs also hold positive emotions? I mean, those all sounded kind of negative.
Well, the positive ones are not going to have a negative effect on the organ.
So you don't need to process those.
Yes, exactly. You don't have to work through those. Uh-huh. But if everything's resolved, and then you are healthy. So you can tell by what people's complaints are where their real problems at the psychological level are.
And so what's the role of psychology in your practice?
So even though I have a psych degree, I do a lot of work with people who have had trauma, but without talking about it necessarily, because I think sometimes talking about it in psychotherapy again and again can just re-traumatize you. It's quite helpful for working on military veterans and guys in particular. They don't really want to talk about it. Mm. And my experience of men in the military is, you know, having had every male in my family fight in either the Boer War, the First World War, and the Second World War between them all, because...
Well, they've been working, in Santa Cruz here, they've been working with these quite a bit. They've been using a lot of MDMA therapy here.
Yes.
And it's been very successful with those elements. We have a caller.
We have Thomas from Santa Cruz. Hi, right. Thomas. We're speaking with Susan McCrossin.
Oh, hi, everybody. Hi, Susan. I just turned on the show. I was in an appointment, and I'm really fascinated by the subject because I learned some techniques myself over the years, like cross-patterning techniques for integrating the brain.
Cross-patterning techniques for integrating the brain. Okay.
Yeah, that's from Brain Gym.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have a question for Susan?
Well, I was just too bad I came in late. I was interested in what were her techniques and is she talking about integrating the two hemispheres of the brain? Is that what she's talking about?
Susan, I'll let you answer that. And why don't you give them your website so they can find out more information?
Okay. So, yes, I am doing that. But doing it as a therapeutic treatment where it's a permanent change and they don't have to continue doing the exercises. Mm-hmm. But the website is Crossinology, so it's my last name with the Mac taken off, so crossinology.com. And I've got all my research on there, a whole lot of information, pages if you want to read it.
Right. Are you offering any books on the topic or DVDs?
There is a book, Breaking the Learning Barrier, that you can buy online, and explains exactly what the model is and why it is that people have the problems that they have.
Okay, Breaking the Learning Barrier.
Yeah, right. But with lots of examples in it. So every time I make a point, I tell a story because people remember okay. They remember stories better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Stories
have what strikes me is that you've really discovered a nonverbal way of addressing emotional issues. And that seems to be the key to really help people let go of them.
And it really helped me because there wasn't really any psychotherapist I could sit down with that I couldn't see where they were heading. I'm a bit too quick in the mind for them. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of somatic psychotherapy where they look at the body and the body holding, and that then shows you what you're holding in the body and that you don't know, right? Because if it was conscious, I'd work with it, but there's a lot of stuff in there that you don't know about. So it is a wonderful way of being able to get in without a long discussion. You can very quickly then just remove the emotional content. And as I was saying before, with being in the military, my experience, most men, when they first come out of off the battlefields, they don't want to talk about it. Several decades, perhaps into their 60s or 70s, that suddenly they start to talk about it. Either they're over it or they think they should talk about it before they die. I'm not sure what it is. But slowly it comes out later. And these things they've been holding in for all these decades.
So it finally comes out and they're able to reintegrate it into
I've been talking with some retired generals about doing PTSD work, but, you know, they're looking for funding and all that sort of thing, sort of starts to hold things up. But it's perfect for that kind of work where you don't have to get the specifics from the individual to be able to remove the deep subconscious emotional, all the stuff in the amygdala, right?
Yes. The amygdala, I've heard much about the amygdala as part of the brainstem and the seat of human emotions. I've also heard the Reichian therapies or the others derived from that suppressed pain and emotion can actually live in the musculature as well.
That's right, because you'll get tension in different places. So lower back pain is typical of either lack of emotional or financial support. And who hasn't had one of those?
Yeah.
So a divorce is just perfect to get lower back pain.
Great.
And I can switch the muscles back on, take the emotional content out, and off they go. They're very happy.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you maybe could almost do like a map of different parts of the body and use that as a guide to how to focus on the issues.
Oh, exactly. As soon as someone tells me their symptom, I say, oh, so when did such and such happen? And they just look at me and they're like, yeah, well, that's a symptom of it, right?
That's great.
We all had lower back pain for years, right? That's how you know, by fixing it on yourself.
So what comes to mind to me is that do you train people to do each other? Like if you're a spouse or maybe even some self techniques?
Actually, my partner, he's a firefighter. Uh-huh. And, you know, they're pulling those big hoses and stuff. He said if it wasn't for me, he wouldn't be able to still be in the job.
Really? Wow.
Because, every now and then he pulls his back and I fix it and off he goes and back to work again.
Huh. So it's very pragmatic issues as well as any psychological ones you want to process.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just the pure physical as well, yes.
Wow.
I fixed quite a few of the firefighters' kids, because often the guys that do jobs like firefighting jobs have learning problems. They don't want to sit at a desk all day. They want to be out doing the action stuff. That's the kind of guys they are.
Yeah, they got to move the energy.
Yeah, exactly. So they usually have a learning problem and it pops up in the children.
So if they move the energy in the way that's good for them, then does that create the receptive state where they can learn in a classroom?
It makes the integration. It gives them the integration, and then it's just like turning the circuit breakers on for them, and suddenly they can do it. They'll come back and say, oh, school's easier this year. I'm like, no, it's not. It doesn't get easier each year. But that's how it seems to them.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, let's say hello to our next caller, okay? And thanks, okay. Thomas. Hi, Risa.
Risa, all right.
How are you?
Hi, I just tuned in and I was wondering if your guest is familiar with the emotional freedom technique, EFT, tapping on the meridians. Is that part of her work?
Emotional, have you heard of that?
That's part of Chinese medicine.
So your work...
That's a Chinese medicine technique.
Emotional freedom technique?
That is a Chinese medicine technique.
Yes. But it's related to the idea of an energy body, yeah?
Right. Okay. Yeah, they tap the meridians to bring activation, to try and activate the meridian more.
Okay.
It's not as specific as what I do.
Okay.
Because I'm going into like 80 different locations in the brain and making sure they're all working the way they and I've been doing it for 27 years, right? I see about 100 people a year. I've trained, I've got about 80 people trained that are on my website.
You have a facility in Boulder, Colorado?
Actually, I'm just north now. I just moved last week, about 30 minutes north. Ah. So I'm sitting on 4 acres looking at the mountains now. Oh,
beautiful. Wow. Fascinating. So you do training as for people as well?
I do training, yes. Yes, my purpose is to replicate myself and to train teachers.
Okay, so Risa, you can get more information about Susan's brain integration technique from her website.
Yep.
Could you say that again, Risa, where that is? And then we can go to another caller.
I think you mean me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Susan. Yeah, I was reading.
Okay. I was wondering about that.
Susan. That can be Risa. That's a more interesting name.
A little acupuncture on you, Mrs. Future, and you'll be fine.
So anyway, it's crossinology.com, crossinology.com.
Okay. So thanks so much for your call.
Well, I do have a question from the Twitter audience wondering about whether or not this works with dyslexia.
Yeah, perfect. It's the same thing,
okay.
Right? It's just variations on the same thing. So typically a dyslexic is higher in logic and lower in gestalt on the sides of their brain, and ADD, ADHD is the reverse.
Okay.
High in gestalt and low in logic.
Okay, we have another caller?
Yes, we do. Mark from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mark.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask the question about how she would relate Asperger's to this
therapy.
Asperger's syndrome. Are you familiar with that, yeah. Susan?
Yes, I am familiar. So Asperger's also, it's a bit like autism. It is a huge umbrella term. So people have different symptoms that come, but typically the Asperger's person speaks out when they shouldn't. It is sort of unable to inhibit themselves. I wouldn't say that I totally cure Asperger's, but I've certainly improved them.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Susan. It's really been wonderful having you on the show today and talking about this interesting energy body healing modality. It's really fascinating.
Yes. And
my pleasure.
Let's give you your website one more time before we sign off for the CBS News.
Crossinology.com.
Cross.
Yep, that's it.
Okay, wonderful.
And it's still interesting to me, even after 27 years.
Right.
It is interesting work.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So breaking the brain barrier.
Yeah, thanks so much for your time and appreciate your presence.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye for now.
Okay, folks, this is Dr. Future Show on KSTO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, San Jose, Monterey, Watsonville, and wherever you are.